order. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2460. And I would like to remind everyone to shut off your phones and your Blackberries and your jet engines and everything else you have going out there. So I would like to call, we're going to have Representative Rosenbaum first, please.
Mr. Chair, did you wish the staff to say anything about this bill before I address it?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Give us a brief.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2460 excludes leave taken by an employee who is unable to work because of a disabling compensable injury from the definition of family leave in workers' compensation law. The bill also establishes that a covered employer may not reduce the amount of an employee's available family leave when they are unable to work because of a disabling compensable injury.
Thank you. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am State Representative Diane Rosenbaum from Hess District 42, and thank you very much for scheduling a hearing on House Bill 2460. This bill deals with the interaction between workers' compensation and Oregon family leave. And it was an issue that first came to my attention a couple of years ago now because a constituent of mine contacted me having been injured on the job. She was at the time a corrections deputy for Multnomah County and was assaulted on the job by an inmate and was disabled from working. And her employer chose to count the first 90 days of her time off for her accepted workers' comp claim against her family leave, which right now in the law is done totally at an employer's discretion. And she was still unable to come to work months later. In January 2004, the county continued to count her time off on a paid workers' comp claim as family leave. And then near the end of March, she got a notice from the county stating that she had exhausted all of her Oregon Family Leave Act law for the 2004 calendar year. She described what her feelings were. She said, should a need arise for me to take leave before 2005, I would be ineligible. I have several family members with chronic health conditions, making this an extremely important issue to me. I have never used OFLA, Oregon Family Leave Act time, in all my years of working, but have always valued knowing it was there. And you're probably familiar with the Oregon Family Leave Act, but it provides that all employees are entitled to up to 12 weeks of unpaid time off during any one-year period for a variety of reasons that include birth or adoption of a child or when a family member is seriously ill and needs somebody to take care of them. And you also, I'm sure, know that workers' compensation is a system that's meant to be a no-fault system where when somebody is hurt on the job and can't work because of that injury, they're entitled to take time off. Those two things are really two different things, and I think in most people's mind, they think if they're off the job due to an on-the-job injury, they're on that program, or if they need to take time off under Oregon Family Leave, that's something else again. But to take the time off when somebody's been hurt through no fault of their own and then deduct that from the time that they're entitled to take care of a seriously ill family member or a child needing care just really doesn't seem fair and is certainly not what people expect when they're hurt on the job. So all that this bill, House Bill 2460, does is now would say that when somebody's hurt on the job, that time cannot be counted against the time off that they're entitled to, just like anybody else. And in the case of my constituent, you know, they felt that they were being basically penalized by virtue of having had this on-the-job injury and having less rights as a result than anybody else would have had. People really should not be forced to choose between their job and their family, and that's exactly what we're currently requiring them to do. And in closing, I'd like to read a quote from an affected worker and my constituent who said, "My understanding of Oregon Family Leave Act time is that it is supposed to be there for workers in case they need it. I have no way of knowing for sure if this will be an issue for me, but I feel uncomfortable knowing that if I experience a personal health problem or a member of my family does, that I will be unable to help. Injured workers are losing their Oregon Family Leave. Please pass House Bill 2460. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? All righty then. Well, thank you, Representative. Appreciate it. I'd like to call Steve Lanning, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Lanning. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. We've heard over the years the same problem a number of times. Probably 4 or 5 years ago is the first time we've got calls. With over 100,000 union members, you can imagine that we get a number of things that are focused to our office, and one of them was this same issue. We've had union reps call us and say, explain exactly what Representative Rosenbaum talked about, and sure enough, it's true. Folks were being denied family leave, that were injured on the job, and the employer was counting the time off as in an injury on the job toward their family leave. And then later on, when they went back to work, they were not allowed to take family leave. So we think the two were meant to be separate. We think they should be separate. And we supported the same bill last session that passed the Senate, and we're happy to support this bill this session, and we hope it gets through this time. If it wasn't a problem, we wouldn't be here, but we've heard it enough times in our office that it needs to be addressed. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Steve. As you can tell by the sponsors, it has great sympathy on this committee. my question is, and maybe this is to Representative Rosenbaum, too, were any of these folks notified that their family leave was being cut into when they were an awful job due to workman's comp, or was it just taken? Does anybody have any data on that?
I think in the case of the constituent who contacted me, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's quite right.
They were notified after the fact,
yeah.
But there was nothing they could do about it at that point.
Right.
And by the time they were back at work, they had no time left at all because of the length of their injury.
Right. I think that's important, too. Yes, Representative
Escobar. Yes, does anyone know, Mr. Chair, how did we get these two issues together? That's what astounds me here, because I would never have thought a time loss. I mean, it's not like you volunteer for a time loss accident. How that would interfere with your family leave, I'm having trouble putting the two together.
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, we didn't expect these two to be together either. We were actively involved in our office during the family leave, the writing of the family leave law in this state, and it was one of those things that we heard about later on, that it was being applied. Employers were applying it in workers' comp cases and counting it against employees. So it came as a surprise to us as well when we started getting the calls 4 or 5 years ago that this was a problem.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Edwards, please.
Does the Oregon Family Leave Law, does that apply to all sizes of businesses? I don't know who that's a question for.
I can answer it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum, please do.
Representative Edwards, it applies to all employers that have at least 25 or more employees.
Okay. Thank you. And if I may ask another question, it's also, if you take family leave, that's without pay, is that correct?
Right. That's right.
All right. Any more questions for Mr. Lanning or the good representative? All righty then. Thanks, Steve. Is there anyone else who would like to testify to House Bill 2260 today?
Is it 2460
or 2460?
2460. I have
2460. I'll get it right one of these days. All right. Then, if that's the case.
I have the wrong file, but I don't know why.
I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2460. Thank you, Representative, for pointing that out to me. And then I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 2247. And I'm going to call John Schultz and Brian DeLashman, please. Pardon?
Let me explain the bill, Mr. Chair.
Would the committee administrator please describe the bill to us?
No, certainly, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2247 was pre-session filed at the request of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It requires DCBS to develop a plan to eliminate the sunset of provisions related to services provided by nurse practitioners and workers' compensation claims. And you have in front of you -1 amendments, which outline the plan to eliminate the sunset. And there's a correction on your staff measure summary. The amendments were to be discussed at last Friday's MLEC meeting, but they have not. The concept has been approved, but the amendments have not. So just to get some clarification.
Great. And just to make everyone clear, for those of anyone following along, we're essentially going in reverse order of what I have on the agenda here. So, all right. Mr. Schultz, you want to go first, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I don't seem to have a copy of this amendment in front of me.
It's a big, thick one, so.
No,
I'm big. All right, well, Kristen's going to bring you one right now. All right, John, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm John Schultz, the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer Business Services. And I'm here today to testify in support of HB 2247 with the Dash 1 amendments. In 2003, House Bill 3669 expanded the role of nurse practitioners in the workers' compensation system in Oregon. That bill allowed nurse practitioners to provide compensable medical services to injured workers for up to 90 days, and that they could authorize temporary disability or time loss benefits, as they're also called, for up to 60 days. It allowed them to manage the workers' return to work during that time period as well. As part of the discussion on this bill, there was a sunset of January 1st, 2008, which was placed on the law changes. If the sunset is not addressed during this legislative session, nurse practitioners would return to their prior status in the workers' compensation system. DCBS studied the impact of the 2003 law change and found that there was minimal system impact of allowing nurse practitioners expanded status. Nurse practitioner billings remained the same, less than 1% of total medical billings, before and after the law change. In addition, analysis of the data indicated that nurse practitioner billings only made up 0.2% of the total payments made by Safe Corporation on claims that had nurse practitioner billings. So before and after the law changed, nurse practitioner billings made a very small portion of the overall medical costs. However, the expansion in the worker's ability to continue treatment with a provider with whom they have an established relationship, their nurse practitioner, was established by this bill. MLAC does support removing the sunsets in concept, but as Ms. Van Winkle pointed out, we were not able to put the amendments in front of MLAC on Friday, as they had some other issues that ran long in their meeting. We ask for your support on the bill with the Dash 1 amendments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, I have a question right out of the gate. Will this be before MLAC, and when?
It's scheduled in the tentative schedule, and I have no reason to think it won't be scheduled on February 22nd, which is a week from this Thursday.
All right. We won't be moving anything out of here until we know what they have to feel about it.
Okay.
Mr. Gleichman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Brian Gleichman, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. You've heard the story. I supplied you with two pieces of testimony. One is the single sheet. ONA urges a yes vote on the 2247-1. And the other, which I don't know whether John provided, was the impact of House Bill 3669 in the workers' comp system executive summary. I think that's very telling. As John had indicated, the one of the components of 3669 was a study that was to be done by the workers' comp system of impacts. And I participated in that study group, and there was really four questions that they tried to go through, and it's on my sheet. Identify the number of nurse practitioners who are authorized in Oregon under the statute to provide the services. We were able to discern that 425 had been authorized by workers' comp. That bill required nurse practitioners, if they were going to provide workers' comp system, to actually register with the workers' comp system. So we knew who they were, that they were out there, and they were able then, once they were authorized, to be able to be paid for their services. The access system costs and impacts as a result of the bill, and as John had indicated, extremely small. If you go back historically and actually the bottom of this first page, you will see that we're talking minuscule. In my 30 years in the building dealing with this system, workers' comp system and nurse practitioners going back to 1979. I have not seen the numbers range outside of the 0.04% to 0.06% of what you're really talking about here. So we're talking about a very, very small impact in the system. Determine the nature and frequency of the complaints. There was no complaints filed with the Workers' Comp Division. And the final point, assess impacts on access to or choice via health care providers. What the study found was that in many cases, as Mr. Schultz has indicated, nurse practitioners had relationships with a lot of the people that they dealt with in this workers' comp system. They may, in fact, be in a rural area, already see that patient for high blood pressure or something else, and then have an injury that's well within the scope of the practice. They already have the health history. They put that bond with that worker, and it seemed a logical conclusion that, in fact, this would just allow them to continue access to that nurse practitioner. So with that, I'll respond to any questions. I would also like to thank the division for allowing us to participate in the study group. It was fascinating to actually find what was available in the system as far as information and what we actually had to kind of develop a survey tool and find out who was out there, what they were providing, and so forth. And it was a good exercise to go through.
All righty then. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you clarify in the bill, I believe that a patient can go to a nurse practitioner without going to an attending physician first. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, yes. Up to 90 days. Prior to 2003, when this bill passed, it was 30 days or 12 visits. And if you go farther back in my history, when in workers' comp, it didn't specifically say attending physician. This is prior to the early 90s. Actually, nurse practitioners were able to provide these kinds of treatment within their scope of practice with no limitations as far as the time periods at all.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Just for everyone's information, when I was at the VA being treated for diabetes, I never saw a doctor. So its practice has been a long time.
Any other questions? Representative Berger, please.
This is not really a question of the testifiers, but it appears to me, Mr. Chair, that House Bill 2247 in its original was sort of a placeholder for that says develop a plan, and the amendment is the plan. The administrator is nodding. Okay, I just...
There's a lot of good reading there. We should all get that up.
It's a big plan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I read the same thing. I pulled the bill out when I first came out and went, what is this? My understanding is that even though requested by the division, the drafter didn't have time in the constraints he had to get it out. So they put that as the placeholder, and the actual bill is the dash one.
Thank you.
And there'll be plenty of time to read that because... A lot of people are sensitive to what MLAC does, and if anybody wants a bill signed, we probably better get a yes vote out of them before we move anything out of here. Any more questions or comments on this bill? Alrighty then. Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2247 today? And if not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2247 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2244. Ms. Van Winkle.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Committee members, House Bill 2244 is also pre-session filed at the request of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It eliminates the sunset provisions related to permanent partial disability awards and workers' compensation claims, and it also establishes that the workers' compensation, MLAC, shall biannually review permanent partial disability benefit payment amounts. And in front of you are dash two amendments, which also fill out the known as the points.
Yeah, I see the pattern.
Righty then. I would like to call Mr. Schultz again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and thank you for having me here to testify today. I'm testifying in support of HB 2244 with the Dash 2 amendments. I did want to provide a little bit of context for this bill. It's a little bit more complex than the one that we just discussed. In 2003, the legislature changed how permanent partial disability benefits are calculated and distributed amongst injured workers. The Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee recommended Senate Bill 757 to improve the equity of permanent partial disability awards or benefits for workers' compensation claims and simplified what was a more complex benefit structure. Permanent partial disability awards are provided to workers when they have a permanent disabling condition as a result of their on-the-job injury. So these are typically the most severely injured workers that we're talking about. This bill provided that workers who were entitled to permanent partial disability would all receive the same basic impairment benefit. And a little bit of background on that is that as when you're determining permanent partial disability in the workers' compensation system, impairment is the first thing that must be established. And by impairment, I mean there's a reduction in range of motion, typically based on the condition or the injury. Once impairment is established, then there's a secondary analysis in terms of whether the worker has suffered any work disability as a result of their injury. And the work disability benefits are tied to the worker's wage at injury and are based on the worker's age, education, and their post-injury adaptability and flexibility. These changes were made to better match benefits to actual loss of earning capacity or lost wages by the injured workers. As a part of the discussion on the bill, however, a sunset of January 1, 2008 was placed on these law changes. In 2005, House Bill 2408 made additional changes to the eligibility for the work disability portion of this benefit, the secondary portion, by excluding workers who are released by their doctors to return to their regular work. So that would be in addition to workers who do return to their regular work, and in this case, it would be workers who were said to be qualified by their physicians to go back to their regular job. They would not qualify for the work disability portion, only the impairment benefit. This law also sunsets on January 1st, 2008. If the sunset provisions are not addressed during this legislative session, then the permanent partial disability calculations will return to the old system, and benefit amounts to injured workers would be reduced to what they were in 2001 or the 2001 levels. That would put them at approximately 17th and 36th percentile of awards nationally. As required by the 2005 legislation, DCBS studied the impact of the permanent partial disability benefit changes that were made by these two bills. The study showed that the law changes have redistributed permanent partial disability benefits from workers that are able to return to work more quickly to workers with longer-term injuries and work disability. This is consistent with the policy goals that were intended by the legislature when these statutory changes were made in 2003 and 2005. The study also showed that the law changes so far are cost neutral within the overall system. This finding was also consistent with the policy goals intended by the Management Labor Advisory Committee and by the legislature. And what I mean by that is while these changes to the law have created a different way to calculate the benefit, the real change that has occurred has been more of a redistribution of who gets how much of the benefit. So workers who are disabled from returning to their regular jobs, typically in general, are going to get a higher benefit than workers who are released or can go back to their regular jobs. Workers who earn higher wages are generally going to get a higher award than workers who earn lower wages. Now, these are generalizations, and on every specific award, things are going to vary somewhat. But those are typically the policy considerations that underpin the changes. Individual workers' permanent partial disability benefit awards are affected by this law, as you might imagine, and the study data did not demonstrate a significant difference in overall cost impact to the system, but it does show that individual workers and individual insurance companies or employers may experience higher or lesser award values to particular workers. MLAC has discussed this bill in some detail. They had a sunset subcommittee. They have supported removing the sunsets to the 2003 and 2005 permanent partial disability law changes. They also, as was pointed out by Ms. Van Winkle, are including a requirement to study permanent partial disability benefit amounts on a biennial basis to ensure that original policy goals continue to be met over time. As I pointed out on the former bill, the Management Labor Advisory Committee did not get to the amendments on Friday, and it's scheduled to be reviewed on Thursday, February 22nd. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that I could.
Thank you. Any questions? If you all understand how this is figured out,
it's very technical, and I apologize.
300 degrees times 150% times one eye and one arm. It's kind of Greek to me, but...
Yes, Representative Holby.
Thanks. You mentioned this study is an ongoing study then, every 2 years?
We finished the study that we conducted on the system as it stands today. But what MLAC is recommending as part of this bill is that the department work with MLAC to study this biennially, so every 2 years before the legislature typically would meet in a policy session, that we would again study the impact of the permanent partial disability changes.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So is that follow-up study included in this bill, or this is something that MLAC is just going to do by itself?
No. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, it is included in the bill, and it would be something that that Department of Consumer Business Services would do on an every 2 year basis. And typically this is something we've been doing every 2 years for many years.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Any other questions? I think it does. For the layman reading this, it does make it a little simpler, but still, how do you measure 42% loss of use of a limb? I mean, it isn't like you can get a tape measure out and read that. So thank you very much. If there's no other questions, I'm going to call...
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Linda Barno and Mark Davison, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Davison. I'm representing the Oregon Self-Insurers Association today, and we're here to talk to you just briefly about HB 2244. Our testimony today is a little bit different than John Schultz's testimony. Number one, we're not here to offer a class in calculating permanent partial disability. I don't think either one of us could do that. It's hard enough with the claims examiners. But what we would like to do today is to point out to you the dynamics of what a sunset really is. We've heard over years, and Representative Rosenbaum was with me on the Management Labor Advisory Committee because I served on that committee. I served also on the original Mahonia Hall group that Governor Goldschmidt picked to do the massive rewrite of these workers' comp statutes. And what we have seen since that particular effort is a tremendous change in Oregon workers' comp as it relates to every other state in the United States. We have gone from a very high-cost state and low benefit to the injured worker. We have literally flipped that around now and become one of the best states in the United States in terms of benefits to our injured workers and one of the lowest-cost states to the employers in the state of Oregon. And despite the spirited dialogue that has gone on in the MLAC committee between labor and management, Representative Rosenbaum and I had many of those late evening discussions, both of us must be proud of where Oregon stands today. And what I wanted to bring to your attention specifically here is that we're not in opposition to the PPD schedules that we have in the current law. What we're concerned about is the sunset provision. In workers' compensation, there are four major cost drivers. There's medical cost, there's time loss benefits, there's permanent impairment, and there's voc rehab. And what we have in the current law is a sunset provision in one of those key cost drivers, and that is the PPD issue. We're not asking you to roll the law back, as John Schultz just testified to what it would roll back to. We're not asking for that. What we would like to see is just simply extend the sunset as it's been extended before for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't think we've given it enough time yet to see what's taken place in the PPD awards. Time to work through decisions by the higher courts on particular cases. Time for injuries to occur that qualify for big disability awards. So that's one reason. The second reason is, and I hope Representative Rosenbaum would concur with me here, a sunset provision like this provides a guarantee to you, the legislature, that your Management Labor Advisory Committee, whom you rely on to be your clearinghouse, they basically are an arm or an extension of your work to be the experts. And what this sunset provision would do was to guarantee you that they would come back for meaningful dialogue. The sunset provision itself doesn't have to be the only thing considered in that dialogue. It could be a multitude of issues in workers' comp. But having a sunset, in a sense itself, it doesn't create a crisis, but it creates a definite reason to get together and discuss the issues in workers' comp. To resolve this problem here, like I said earlier, we can simply move the sunset another 4 years out, continue to study. The study that was brought up by John Schultz just a moment ago on the in the bill itself, it's one thing to conduct a study, but there's absolutely no reason, regardless of the results of the study, for the MLAC committee itself to get together in dialogue and make any changes. There's no basic. They can come together, they can discuss it, and they can walk away from it, regardless of what the results are. They can't walk away when there's a sunset facing them. And it's in one of the key cost drivers in workers' comp, and our recommendation would be that that we simply look at extending it for another 4 years and continue to monitor it. It doesn't hurt the worker, and it doesn't hurt the employer in any way, shape, or form to do that. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Representative Chair Schaffler and members of the committee, my name is Linda Barno. I am a co-chair on the Oregon Self-Insurance Association. I'm also a workers' compensation manager for Schnitzer Steel Industries. And I really have not much to add to what Mark has said. I think the beauty of what I'm going to bring here to this discussion right now is that I sit on several state workers' compensation groups. We're located in almost all 50 states. And inevitably, at every legislative meeting, they go, why does Oregon have such a complete program? How do you get what you get done? And I said, you know, the beauty of it is twofold. The beauty is our MLAC advisory committee. And secondly, is that we have sunset provisions because we are forced to act. Everyone has something on the table, and everyone has to have the discussion and come to an agreed conclusion. When you have, we have studies in all these states, and we can study and we can talk and we can go on, but there's no action. And I'm always bragging about our system here and how we've turned this system around. And when faced with this issue of the sunsets, I'd like to just impart upon you how critical, from my standpoint, it is to bring this discussion not only out, but to a conclusion on a regular basis. Whether it's 4 years, what other terms people feel that it's important to get together, that it is important to come down and to make sure not only from our management point of view, but from labor, to keep tweaking these bills, this system, to make sure it's covering what we want, and that's our injured workers. Thank you.
Any questions? All right. Well, thank you. Yes, Representative Berger.
I have a comment if you're about to gavel.
Go right ahead.
I am perhaps not as familiar with these workings as some Representative Rosenbaum has said on MLOC, but I find their testimony very persuasive. Nobody is hurt by adding four more years to this sunset, Mr. Chair, and would you consider such an amendment?
Well, Representative, we'll consider anything in this room because that's what our job is. Now, I'll remind everyone, this is a public hearing. We ain't making any decisions today, and I encourage all my and urge all my members up here to go and do diligent homework, and we'll make a decision later. But we're not making any decisions today.
I understand that, but I just want to put that on the record. I found their testimony quite persuasive.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, we will be giving the same logical, what we believe, testimony to MLAC at their next meeting. Mm-hmm. We were denied that opportunity last Friday. We would have done this, and we would be encouraging them the same way we've encouraged you to consider that.
And you were denied because of...
They had time.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Well, thank you. And are there any more comments or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum,
thank
please.
You, Mr. Chair. And good to see you again, Mark. And Mark is certainly right that he and I spent many hours in many, many rooms trying to hammer out agreements, sometimes more successfully than other times. I would just say, though, that the sunset was not something that was universally popular, as I remember. I think that there was a feeling on the part of the labor representatives that people were being somewhat held hostage by the threat of benefits reducing. And so I will be curious to see what happens when the Labor Management Committee does take this up, see whether an agreement is reached there, and I think we probably should be looking to see what they recommend.
Well, and I just quickly run over this. It does say here that the committee shall biannually review permanent partial disability benefit amounts of payments in the amendment. I don't know if that helps you or not.
Well, Mr. Representative, we considered that, but as I testified earlier, a review is fairly benign. And you can be asked to review something and then walk away from any meaningful discussion, and that's why the opportunity to have that sunset kept in there would be helpful.
Very good. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I just need to enter into the record, and in front of you there are letters from seven members of the Oregon Self-Insurance Association that were unable to be here and testify.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Very good afternoon. Are there any other more questions, comments on this bill? Anybody else want to testify to House Bill 2244 today? Alrighty then. Well, then I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2244. And are there anything for the good of the order today? If not, I'm going to stand adjourned. Thank you very much.